In last week's episode, I covered the build-up to the Battle of Actium, the culmination of years of Roman conflict following the death of Julius Caesar. In today's episode, I will expand on what I started last week, providing you with the story of the battle itself and the fallout. Hello, and welcome to the Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I am here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want, and today I want to talk about the Battle of Actium. Again. Before I start, I'm going to briefly recap what I said in last week's episode. Following the assassination of Julius Caesar, Rome fell into a civil war. As Julius Caesar's closest confidants, his great niece and chosen heir Octavian, his right-hand man and good friend Mark Antony, and another guy who was super useless named Lepidus, tried to stalk and murder all those involved in Julius Caesar's assassination. Being the three most powerful people in Rome, they all had claim to the consulship, or emperor, I guess it depends on whether you believe they were trying to protect the republic or not. But none of these men were intending on allowing another to take the crown, so to avoid infighting, they formed the Second Triumvirate, and ruled altogether. And then Mark Antony gets on with Cleopatra. So while this is happening, his brother's revolting against Octavian and is suppressed. Mark Antony is pissed, so he joins forces with Sextus Pompey, a rival to Octavian. Octavian and Lepidus go to meet them and end up making peace by marrying Octavian's sister Octavia to Mark Antony. But after this battle, Lepidus claims the victory for himself, and Octavian is pissed, so he exiles him. Now there are only two people in the Second Triumvirate. And even though Antony's married to Octavia, he spends all his time in the East with Cleopatra. And after a few failed military brigades, he does some sketchy things where he declares his children as kings and governors, even though they're like 3 years old. Eventually, all his weirdness provokes Octavian to disband the Second Triumvirate, leaving them the two main powers in Rome, and completely unchecked. Octavian wants to go to war with Antony to claim full control of Rome himself. But Antony still has too much support, and Octavian isn't willing to anger them. So he launches one of the most vicious propaganda campaigns in history against Cleopatra, positioning himself as Antony's savior, and positioning her as the evil seductress who has Antony under her spell. His plan works perfectly, and he declares war on Cleopatra. However, he knows that this essentially means declaring war on Antony, and Antony takes the bait. And now, Antony and Cleopatra have their armies mobilized awaiting Octavian in Actium, where we will pick up today. So, it's the winter of 32-31 BCE, and Antony and Cleopatra's army is mobilized in Actium. Just like I mentioned last week, Antony is completely reliant on Cleopatra and Egypt's treasury to be able to support his army financially. And they devised a heavily guarded transport route, running up from the Peloponnesian coast through Methone and Leucas, where supplies come through from Egypt. Meanwhile, Octavian has mobilized his forces, and they consist of 80,000 infantry, 12,000 cavalry, 3,000 archers, and over 400 ships. His fleet was comprised of lightweight, maneuverable Liburnian vessels, which at the time were commonly used only as patrols or commerce, and were uncommonly used as warships. However, this risk will work out well for him. His ships were also equipped with, and pardon my sailor lingo, rams on the prow, and catapults for deploying a device known as the harpax. The harpax was a wooden harpoon encased in iron, with a hook on one end and a rope on the other. This rope was attached to the windlass, which would then be shot into an enemy ship. The rope would be cranked tightly and would draw the opponent's ship closer. Close enough to then be boarded. Sorry if you don't care about that, but it was an important player in the battle, and I gotta fill time somehow. If you remember General Marcus Vipsanius Agrippa from last week, he was commanding the sea forces, while Octavian oversaw the army on land. If you don't remember Agrippa, he was a popular and very skilled Roman general, who goes on to have a very successful career, and is a close confidant to our man, Octavian. However, in early 31 BCE, Agrippa surprised Antony and Cleopatra, who were still just vibing in Actium, by showing up while their armies were still in winter quarters, and unprepared to fight. But Agrippa wasn't really focused on them yet. He was trying to intercept their transport route, and was quickly able to seize Methone and cut off supplies. Meanwhile, Octavian's land forces were 5 miles north of Actium. Agrippa continued down the coast, seizing and taking Lucas, effectively cutting off all of Antony's supplies. This left Antony and Cleopatra in a pretty sticky situation. They were stuck between Octavian on the land and Agrippa at sea, and they had no more resources coming in, so they needed to either act or starve, which really just makes the decision for them. But they made their choice, and historians believe that they intended to deploy the fleet, fight against Agrippa, and hopefully win. However, if it was looking like Agrippa's fleet was dominating, they would break through Agrippa's line of ships and make a run for Egypt. I say historians believe this because we have no conclusive proof that this is what was going on in Antony's mind, but I trust the historians, even though my old history teacher literally made so much shit up. But anyway, they ordered the soldiers to their ships, the sails to be kept at the ready, and they stored the war chest on the fastest of Cleopatra's transports. And on September 2nd of 32 BCE, Antony and Cleopatra moved their fleet to the Ionian Sea to meet Agrippa. And yes, it's weird that Agrippa was there in, like, January. I get it. But from my extensive research, in which I have covered the entire history of the world, I find that Rome just always tends to take its sweet time. But anyway, September 2nd, Antony and Cleopatra finally move their fleets forward to meet Agrippa in the Ionian Sea, and thus begins the Battle of Actium. Cleopatra and Antony were hoping to take advantage of the wind, which was coming across seaward towards Agrippa's ships, hoping to use it to turn the enemy ships south. This would turn them away from Octavian's land forces and fortified camp, making Octavian's forces vulnerable to an attack from Antony's, since they would be left with no support from the fleet. But Octavian wasn't buying it. He heard from deserters of Antony's army that Antony and Cleopatra had no real intention of fighting and hoped only to break through the lines and escape to Egypt. So Agrippa deployed the fleet for either eventuality, even though it was clear that a pursuit of Antony's ships at full sail would be futile. To combat this, he positioned the ships in three formations, which apparently negated Antony's hope that the wind would help his cause. However, when noon came around, so did the wind, and Antony launched his ships towards Agrippa, still hoping he could break through Agrippa's line and make it to Egypt. Remember when I explained the forces on each team, partly last episode and partly this episode? To recap, Antony had these huge, fortified Roman warships called Quinquerma, I think? And Agrippa had these tiny commercial ships called Liburnians, but Agrippa's smaller and faster vessels were found to be incredibly effective. They were able to skillfully outmaneuver Antony's large and slow boats. And, in addition to that, Agrippa was using the Harpax, which quickly sank 15 of Antony's ships, including Antony's flagship, making the two sides fight in hand-to-hand combat. Agrippa's ships would ram Antony's larger vessels repeatedly, constantly sinking or at least neutralizing them. Antony's ships were left like floating fortresses, firing arrows and throwing stones, but utterly defenseless to the attacks of the smaller vessels, who would rip through their entire ship and leave them unable to respond. Quickly, members of Antony's squadron began to abandon the fight and sail back to Actium. It was quickly becoming very clear that Antony's fleet stood no chance against Agrippa. Cleopatra knew this and decided to go with Plan B. She and her fleet broke off from the battle and headed towards the open seas, to Egypt. A historian named Cassius Dio described the battle following Cleopatra's departure as such. An eyewitness of what took place might have compared it to walled towns or else islands, many in number and close together, being besieged by the sea. And not soon after, Antony's flagship was destroyed, hit by the Harpax, so he quickly needed to escape to another, and when he did, he directed his remaining fleet to sail towards the open sea and after Cleopatra. Following Antony and Cleopatra's return to Egypt, Antony fell into a deep depression. He was so embarrassed by the defeat, he refused to talk to anyone, not even Cleopatra. Meanwhile, Antony's troops back in Actium were patiently waiting for word on what to do with themselves, as they were still surrounded on all sides by Octavian's forces. But most of them were also still loyal to Antony. Keyword most. A select few joined Octavian, and didn't know whether to fight or desert. Antony quickly sent word to his land forces by means of Canidius Crassus to withdraw and pull back into Asia to await further order. However, Antony's positions at sea quickly had no choice but to surrender to Agrippa, who accepted the following morning. On September 3rd, most of these ships were so badly damaged that Agrippa had no choice but to burn them all and absorb the remainder of Antony's crew into his own. Antony and Cleopatra are back in Alexandria planning their next move, and they quickly realize that if Octavian was to attack them there, they would most certainly not be able to defend themselves or their people. So Cleopatra suggests that they flee to Spain, where they could raise a stronger army, one with the hopes of defeating Octavian. However, like I mentioned earlier, Antony is so demoralized by his defeat that he ignores everyone. He's ignoring Cleopatra's attempts to get the two of them to safety. He ignores all of Canidius Crassus' attempts to find out what they should be doing with his legions in Asia, and all he seems to do is drink. And it takes another year or so for Octavian to make it to Alexandria. And within that time, Antony can't shake the depression, avoiding Cleopatra and all his friends who try to help. But in July of 30 BCE, Octavian's fleet finally made it to Alexandria. And according to my source, this immediately pulled Antony from his depression, like a miracle. Hear that, my friends? The cure to depression is going to war. So he mobilizes his forces and strikes on Octavian's incoming legions. Who'd have thought? He wins the day. Only the day. But still, good job, Antony. It was starting to look like you were a bad general. However, Octavian is, you know, not gonna leave them alone, but at least Antony's not depressed anymore. A few days later, by August 1st, most of Antony's troops had deserted. Awkward. And although they had sort of known for a while, it was starting to sink in that they were really fighting on the losing side. And now, things start to get complicated. So, imagine Alexandria is under siege, and Antony and Cleopatra know that their hours are numbered. They're pretty much out of options, and neither really want to end up in Octavian's Rome, and are pretty worried about what he would do to them if he got his hands on them. So, when Antony hears that Cleopatra killed herself, obviously he's heartbroken, but he's not surprised. Cleopatra has too much pride. This is exactly the kind of thing she would do. She would never let herself be degraded, stripped of her titles and her power, paraded through the streets of Rome as a trophy. All things that were pretty much guaranteed to happen if Octavian got his hands on her. So Antony believes it when he's told she's killed herself. And so he does the same. He takes a knife and stabs himself, telling his servants to take his body to Cleopatra's, and the two of them could rest together in peace. And then Octavian wins and becomes the emperor. The end.
No!
That's what you'd think, but no! Cause Cleopatra pulls a frickin' Juliet and is like, nah, bitch, I'm not dead. But it's too late, because Antony's now minutes from death, blood spilling from his knife wound. If only he hadn't listened to the rumors. If only he had gone to find Cleopatra first. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter at this point, cause these two were goners regardless, but anyway. Antony's still got some fight left in him, and he's lived long enough now to make it to the citadel where Cleopatra had taken refuge, and romantically, Antony dies in Cleopatra's arms. If there's one thing we can take away from this story, it's the importance of communication in relationships, because if there was proper communication in this relationship, maybe a life could have been saved, even if it was only for the next hour, because it really doesn't take long for Octavian to make it to Cleopatra at the Citadel.
So, you've probably realized at this point that Cleopatra stands no chance. Octavian is quickly closing in on her. Her husband is dead, her soldiers are dead, her kids aren't dead yet, but... So when Octavian arrives at the Citadel, she goes back to her roots. She tries her tried and true method of getting what she wants, seduction. Because she's an evil, nasty, woman seductress bitch. I'm joking, obviously, because that's what Octavian's propaganda made her out to be. But Octavian was not having it. He was a brave, strong man, the first ever to be able to resist Cleopatra's attempts. He presented her with terms of surrender, and at this point, she had no choice but to accept. However, she asked for one thing. She asked for some time to put her affairs in order, and he granted it. But little did he know, she had no intention of returning to Octavian. But so Octavian won. I don't really feel like this is a huge surprise, like he clearly had a leg up the entire time, but You know, he wins and he captures Egypt, making it a Roman state. Meanwhile, during Cleopatra's time to, quote, put her affairs in order, she, kills herself. Yeah, so I guess that was the affair that she needed to put in order. It's rumored that she did so using an asp, a highly respected, poisonous Egyptian snake that symbolized divine royalty. However, this might be a myth. I'm not really sure. After her death, Octavian did a nice thing. He granted Cleopatra and Antony's wishes to be buried together. So nice of him. And then he kills Caesarion. Less nice. If you forgot, Caesarion is Cleopatra and Julius Caesar's son. This means that there is nobody closer to Julius Caesar than Octavian now, and that means that nobody can really challenge his claim to the throne. Cleopatra and Antony's three children together, Ptolemy, Cleopatra Selene II, and Alexander, were taken to Rome, where they were raised by Octavia, Antony's first wife, and Octavian's sister. With their return to Rome, everyone celebrated, and Octavian made Ptolemy, Cleopatra Selene II, and Alexander march in the procession of his triumph behind an effigy of their mother, positioned resting on a couch, a symbol of Egyptian luxury. The Roman people hailed Octavian as the savior of Rome, and with his recent success in Egypt, he enhanced his reputation by taking over Egypt's grain supply to feed the Roman plebeians, which feels a little cruel, but what do you expect from a Roman? Like, additionally, because of his new control in Egypt, he accepted the title and rights and honors of a Ptolemaic pharaoh, mostly to appease Cleopatra's former subjects. However, he really didn't have an interest in any of this and mostly just let it be. Now, I could make a whole podcast about Octavian's emperorship and just him as a person because he's an incredibly important figure in ancient Rome, and his political and military conquest changed the course of Roman history forever. But I'm just gonna summarize. So Octavian was clever. He may have never been an exceptional general, but he was a genius politician. People can debate his character. Opinions on him tend to vary a lot person to person. He's pretty morally ambiguous. Some people see him as a tyrant who destroyed the Roman Republic, and others see him as the virtuous emperor who brought about a golden age in Rome. And honestly, I think these two things can coexist. Octavian had, like, unofficially been the emperor since the defeat of Antony, and honestly before that as well. But mindful of how dangerous it was for Julius Caesar to appear too ambitious, in January of 27 BCE, he declared that the crisis in Rome was over and humbly resigned his powers, only for the Senate to then pretty much immediately restore them, along with the title Augustus, or Illustrious One. And his name was changed to Caesar Augustus. He graciously accepted the Senate's gesture and became the first emperor of the Roman Empire. The Battle of Actium changed the course of Roman history. Octavian, now Augustus, went on to rule in Rome for 40 years and 7 months, bringing about a golden age, which would then kind of end with Tiberius's rule following his death. But within his reign, he implemented some of the hallmarks of the Roman Empire. Aqueducts, roads connecting all Roman territories, and sewage systems. He put in practice many of the systems that really make Rome stand out against all other ancient civilizations. And who knows what Rome would have looked like if Antony had won the war. Likely very, very different. To be fully honest with y'all, I didn't actually use too many sources for this episode. I kinda just relied really heavily on one from World History Encyclopedia. And I would recommend you read it, but it's super long and super dense, so if you're looking for light reading, I would not recommend it. And also, this isn't something I use for this episode, but there's a good video called Roman History in 20 Minutes on YouTube, which I will link as well. It's really fun, and if you like Roman history, you'll like it. Okay, thank you so much for listening. We are now done with the Battle of Actium. I had a lot of fun with this one. I feel like that came across in the episodes, but I hope you had fun too. And same time next week? Yeah, I'll be here, so I'd be happy to see you again. Thank you so much for listening.